I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
A good Monday morning to all of you. Welcome to June and welcome to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. It's weird, Danny, because if you just catch me off guard while I'm doing something, you say, what's the date? I might still say April 19th. It's June 1st today.
That's right. I know. Yeah, I suppose it is. I was kind of surprised to learn that it is June. I learned it, that it was going to be June a few days ago. I was like, wait, what? It's the end of May? I got no idea anymore, man. It really is just ridiculous trying to sort of navigate this. Every day is the same. Thank goodness the school part of it is over, at least for a little while. We can kind of get a break from that kind of stuff, but yeah, there's not much else to look look forward to over the next week or two.
There's a ton to talk about today, as is typically the case on these Monday shows, because so much comes down in the way of sports news over the weekend. So we'll get into that on Grant and Danny. Are you finally done then? It sounds like with the homeschooling stuff. Is there like a date where they stop sending that, where you would have been out of school anyway? How does that work?
Yeah. It's a month early. So May 29th was the last day for DC schools. The next month is basically going to be used, as we understand it, for a bunch of training. And we're going to figure out how to do, not us personally, but the schools, the teachers, principals, administrators, everybody are going to figure out how the hell they're going to do school in the fall. And I have ideas. I'm not an expert. I don't know anything. I just know that their proposals or their ideas they're kicking around right now are not good enough. You know how I feel about this. This is the most important thing right now when we're talking about COVID-19 and pandemic and getting things back to normal as best we can. Kids need to be in school. Obviously, needs to be safe. We all know that. That's the first domino, the most important domino that has to fall, not only for parents' sanity, but working parents, places where you've got folks that work in all the frontline things that we need to continue, all the grocery stores, the healthcare workers, everybody everywhere. Kids need to be out of the house, and if they're stuck in the house, then productivity can't really get kickstarted. That's what's got to happen. And I need more. I need more in that regard than, well, they'll go one day and stay home for 4 days. No. They'll do something else. Pitch a tent. Have outside breeze. Hold classes in the sandlot. Let's do something else besides what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're trying to figure that out all over the country right now, D.C. and everywhere else. Now, I was thinking all weekend long, though, about not just with the pandemic, and it seems to be getting everybody at this point. I was listening to the Junkies for a little bit. EB declared the quarantine over, so I guess that's good. We don't have to quarantine
anymore.
We're all
set. Bish
Bucks was saying he was trying to sleep last night when his kids was having people over to the house. And, I mean, I think people are just fed up and tired with what's going on, so that everybody's starting to kind of live a little bit more normally. But you know, you really could use sports at times of trying, consequence in this country. Or you look right now about what was going on over the last several nights with the rallies and the protests, many of which turned into looting and major cities in this country, including miles from where I'm sitting and way shorter from where you're sitting. You know, fires and just terrible destruction and just an awful, tragic, sad scene.
Yeah, about 2 minutes from my front door in Georgetown. News. Yeah, a couple minutes from my front door in Georgetown. I did not have a great night's sleep last night. I was, I'm 40, whatever I am, but worried about my kids and wife and stuff like that. Where I understand frustration. I certainly get that. But it, when it starts to happen right next to where you live, and you're sort of sitting there am I going to be okay? Do I have to evacuate tonight? I mean, I know that, that fear perils in comparison to what a lot of the folks that are frustrated are talking about, but I'm telling you, I wasn't that pleased last evening.
No, and I don't think anybody is. I mean, it's just bad all the way around. But my point is, so often sports are an escape, and you get sports to kind of, I would say, help heal, you know, to improve mm-hmm. people's lives. And I don't necessarily know that we need a distraction right now. Maybe that would be the worst thing for what's going on. But it would be nice as a unifying item that brings people together and an uplifting positive force if you had sports. But we don't even have that, which we typically do, to get by. So what was the highlight of your weekend then? Let's go positive for a second. Best thing that happened to the Rouillets this weekend was what?
Oh, that's a good question. Good question by you. I will say we took my littlest, my youngest. We've done this with my oldest a couple times where we just can't have the two boys at home while everyone's working, causing chaos and everything. Yesterday afternoon, we took my youngest, we were running this experiment, up to his grandmother's, my mother-in-law's, and we did the exchange at kind of the midway point, and we didn't have any huge meltdowns. Like, we're sitting there worried, like, okay, like, we'll distract, you'll distract them, and we'll kind of sneak into the car, and we'll go, and that'll be that. But we didn't have any huge problems. And it seemed, knock on wood, that's me knocking on wood, if you can hear it, seemed to be seamless. And everyone got a good night's sleep last night. Everybody seems to be A-okay this morning with some beautiful weather. That's a nice little positive.
That's a hit. That's Bing Crosby, hit. White Christmas in 1942 there.
That's a base
Elton
hit.
Elton John, Candle in the Wind in 97. That's going to sell some records. Your boy got a haircut this weekend.
Hey, neato gang.
First time since all this started. It was thick. It was helmet-like. It was longer than it should have been. And, you know, I was going to wait and play by the rules like I've done. You tell me to wear a mask, I'll wear a mask. You tell me not to go somewhere, I won't go anywhere. And as of this weekend on the 29th, I was able to go get a haircut. So that's exactly what I did. I wore a mask. The barber wears a mask. Had gloves on. Switched out the gloves after the person before me. Put on new gloves. I wasn't able to be anywhere near the barber chairs while people were getting haircuts. Them and the barbers were the only ones in the building. There was no like full waiting area or anything. It was appointment only. They spray the seats down with cleaner and scrub it real good before you sit down. I got to be honest with you. If it happens, it happens. But I've never felt like I was in a cleanlier barbershop or was less at risk of getting any kind of germs in a barbershop than in this particular place where I was on Saturday because of the precautions being taken. Like the mask, even during the haircut, doesn't come off. Because my thought was, okay, you wear the mask the whole time, but at some point they got to take the mask off. And they didn't. They kind of fold it down like below your ear to cut around your ear and then put the string right back on around your ear. But I felt like they did a heck of a job. That they were out of work, these guys who were cutting my hair in this barbershop for 2 months. They couldn't cut anybody's hair. And they just came back in to the game and started again here in earnest.
Nice.
But gosh, it felt good. You forget. I was talking to Pete about this yesterday on our weekend
Little
show.
Things, man. I know.
It's just – that is like the closest I would say. I don't know a better word than this, and this sounds like a dumb word. But the pampering, like that my wife or oftentimes like you, maybe your wife or women will enjoy, whether it's – you know, my wife loves going to get like treatments, you know, like facial or pedicures, manicures, stuff like that. And it makes her feel good, and it's very important for her physical, mental health, whatever it is. For me, that is a haircut. And you forget that. You're just like, oh, I got to go get a haircut. I got a half hour here. I'll go. You don't think about it. But you sit in that chair and someone cuts your hair and you leave there and you actually, you know, don't feel like you hate your hair and it's not thick and all over the place. Like, that to me is about as good as it gets, is to get a haircut. And I would not have been having this conversation with you if this never happened and I just got another haircut yesterday. I wouldn't think about it.
That's right.
It. But you forget just how good that feels, how much you like it, what it does for your psyche to walk out of a barbershop after just sitting down and chopping it up for 20 minutes while someone chops your hair off your head. It's pretty good.
I will tell you, I think one of the best feelings that a man can have is that 30 to 45 seconds where they you know, after the haircut's pretty much done, right? You're winding down and you know it's pretty much done. It's been a nice experience. And the barber turns around. It's that little machine. with that hot shaving cream that comes out. Slathers it on the back of your neck. You get a nice little rub in on the back of your neck. It tingles. It feels very nice. And they take
a little bit.
A little bit of burn, but it's a nice burn, right? It's not a painful burn. It's a tingle. It's like those Denorex and Seltzer Blue commercials back in the day, whichever's which. And then they run that little razor down there to get rid of those weird back neck hairs that are uncomfortable that dudes know about. They're gone, and they tally off a little bit of baby powder, whatever it is, to clean it up. That is a very pleasurable thing, and I love it. I love that.
Big
about
fan
going to a
of the places like Floyd's 99 does this, and I've gone to Sports Clips several times, and they'll do this. Normally, I kind of just go to your traditional barber shop with a little like swirling red and blue pole on the outside, but and then they'll do this. But you get like the hot cold towel back and forth. So if they throw the hot towel on you before the shave, and then the cold towel on your face after.
Oh yeah.
That feeling there, I will stack up with just about anything you can do. Anything you can get. But, yeah, it was good. So I got my hair cut. Felt like it was a huge accomplishment. Felt really, really normal. And was able to do it coloring within the lines here. I mean, that's within the rules at this point. Don't need to break the rules to do that anymore, which is good. And I just felt happy for this guy I was talking to. I went to a place I'd never been before. This kid was, like, 24 years old that was cutting my hair, and he had been out of work for 2 months. He just hadn't been able to cut hair. Just not working for 2 months. And just talking to him about what it meant to get back to start doing that. Good for him. So I'm excited about that. But that was the highlight of the weekend for me. There's a lot going on the baseball front. So first of all, yesterday, the Players Association made another proposal to the owners. This is their response. The owners sent them something that they would never accept. They've sent the owners something the owners would never accept. We'll get into some of the details on that next. Also, the Nationals and ownership, the Learners have decided that they were not going to continue to pay a $400 stipend to minor leaguers in June. They've lowered that number to $300, and they released 30 or so players from the organization. So, Sean Doolittle and a bunch of the players on the Nats have decided they're going to make up the lost money for those players for that stipend that they live off of at $400 a month. But we can talk about that next as well. You're listening to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. G&D on this 1st of June, a Monday in 2020. Welcome back, 106.7 The Fan. So yesterday, the Players Association in Major League Baseball delivered a return-to-play proposal to the league. You'll remember that the owners early last week sent the players a deal with a sliding scale that made them take another massive pay cut after they had already taken what worked out to about a 50% pay cut. And the players were never going to agree to that. It was kind of the start of the negotiation. The players, led by Nationals ace Max Scherzer, sent a shot across the bow saying, "I'm not even sure we're going to respond to this. It's a joke." I'm paraphrasing. They did respond. They sent a counter to the owners yesterday, one that the owners are not going to agree to. So here's where we are. I mean, Danny, this is the negotiation that has started with the owners wanting the world. Now the players want almost everything that they'd prefer. And you know how this works. Hopefully, eventually, we come together and meet in the middle. The problem this time around, though, is the clock. There's just not a lot of time. If you're trying to play a season, COVID shortened, in Major League Baseball this summer, you've got to report in early June to be playing by the end of July. If you're trying to get enough games in to warrant having a campaign, having a playoffs, crowning a champion, you can't be starting in mid-August. So the clock is ticking to get something done. And the players, with their proposal yesterday, essentially put the pressure on the owners saying, look, something's got to be done in the next week or two because we need to report at some point in the middle of June. And we're nowhere near an agreement. I mean, there's no reason the owners should accept this. I'll say that just like I said, there's no reason the players should accept the deal that was sent. But this is how negotiations always start. The concern is that normally you've got weeks or months when you're at this point. And instead, this time we have days.
If this is the starting point, this should have happened a month ago. Now, we didn't know what we didn't know then. And, you know, there's the sense of urgency, and you're right. Like, this needs to happen this week for either plan, as far as I can tell, to really get going, because players need workout time, spring training time, pitchers need to throw, and that's really the key is, you know, hitters can hit off a tee and do a bunch of things to try to stay sharp. It won't be replicated until you actually get some kind of game experience. But to me, this is urgency, and they seem to be very, very far apart. Now, I think you touched on this. The big bottom line to me, the impasse that it seems, is the owners want the players to absorb their losses. The owners are going to lose money or not make as much money, whatever it is, and they want to be made whole by the players, and the players don't want that. I understand the players not wanting that. I guess I get the owners not wanting to lose as much money too, but I don't think that's necessarily fair or right. So I'm going to side generally with the players and think it needs to be, if there's a scale, players offer on one side, owners offer on the other. I think it needs to be way closer to the player side on this thing. But you're right. There's no shot, as far as I can tell, that the owners will just say, thank you so much for sending this. We're glad you finally saw it our way. Let's get started Wednesday. You know, you guys can go start working out. This they're pretty far apart, man, and there needs to be some urgency.
Here is the key items from the proposal. First, rather than the 80-ish games that the owners suggested, the players, they want to play as many games as possible because they're going to get paid, if they have their way, as a prorated portion of 162, more for every game they play. Not the way that the owners are suggesting it. But the players want to be paid basically on a per-game basis. So instead of 80 games, they've suggested 114. My first thought is, how on earth do you try to play 114 games starting at the end of June? I mean, they're talking about the first week of July through October 31st, and that's what it would be. My buddy who's plays in Major League Baseball texted me last night, said, what did you think of the proposal? And I said, well, I've got a lot of thoughts. He's like, send them to me. So the first thing I said was, I have no idea how you're going to play 114 games. And he basically said it's going to be a lot of doubleheaders. Players are cool with and want the doubleheaders. Owners don't. They wanted the doubleheaders before when they could make money on the two gates, when they had fans in the stands. It's a great way to make some extra cash in a short time. They don't want it if there's not fans in the stands, essentially. So I don't think that works. But they're saying 114. The owners are probably down now to wanting around 65 or so. So maybe they do that to try to move the goalposts a little bit back toward the 80 range, and that's where you can meet. The players did throw in a couple years of expanded playoffs as a sweetener for the owners. So this wouldn't just be this year, but maybe next year. Money in the playoffs for TV deals, massive. The more teams, the bigger the payout for the owners. So that's something they're going to like. The players also put in, though, an opt-out for all players if they don't want to play. I'd have to imagine the owners are going to hate that. So that means, and I'm just picking names here, but look, if you have a pre-existing condition, my buddy Kyle Gibson from the Texas Rangers, who had a stomach issue last year and has a deteriorated immune system, or David Dahl from the Colorado Rockies, who I think is had some kind of surgery to take out something and has a bad immune system. You know, the guys like that, they don't want to play, they don't have to. I think that's kind of reasonable. But then also, let's say Sean Doolittle decides, based on a study that he found, that maybe he'll be at risk many, many, many years from now if he contracts COVID-19. If he's not comfortable playing, he could just opt out. I can't imagine the owners are going to love the idea of players picking and choosing. I'm okay with that, to be completely honest with you, Danny, because I think that's kind of the way the world's going to have to operate for a little while. Whenever we get there, and I'm not going to sit here and scream that we need to do it today because I don't have the answers, but I do think that whenever we get to our new normal, there is going to be an opt-in where people who are comfortable going to a restaurant can do it, and people who don't want to leave their house don't have to. And I don't know why baseball would be a whole lot different.
Sure. I mean, the dollar amounts and some of the – you want to have a hard and fast rule, but I understand that. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I would hope that there's some flexibility there within, right? Because it may not even be you. It may be your wife. It may be your kid or your mother-in-law or a million different things that it could affect somebody where they go, you know what, it's worth it to me not to make – X amount of money this year because I'm okay. And then other people are going to have to take certain risks and make certain, you know, build certain bridges and burn others. And these are adult decisions that adults are forced to make. So I would certainly hope that there's something reasonable to come out of it when it comes to that certain part of it. But again, I just cannot imagine there's much here that the owners are going to like. I think there was, can you talk about this? And I had a hard time understanding this. So I'm actually asking you for clarification. There's one part reading Jeff Passan's report about this that was considered an olive branch from the players to the owners. Can you talk about that and your understanding of that? Because I didn't quite get why it was an olive branch.
Well, I think there's a couple things. Number one was the 2 years of the expanded playoffs, right? Because that is, I think, massive money for the owners that they want. The players aren't always for the expanded playoffs. What you're talking about, though, is the financial element of the deferred money if the playoffs don't happen. So in other words, if the season gets shut down again, or if for some reason they can't get to the postseason or they can't finish it and there's a second wave, in the previous negotiations, from my understanding, the owners would kind of be out of luck based on the agreement where the players have to be paid out. Let's just say they go with that sliding scale and you owe Max Scherzer, I'm just picking round numbers now, $10 million. My understanding is that he's getting that money if you're playing the season and the act of God comes and you can't finish the season. This olive branch, supposedly, was that, the way I understand it, if there's no postseason, the players will defer that $100 million into either the next contracts, the next deal, or to not have to be paid until they renegotiate and can kind of kick it down the line and sort it out.
Oh, I see. So in other words, they're going to be, the players are going to be made whole, but it's just on a different timeline. So instead of saying, hey, at the end of the month, give me my money,
that part I'm kind of speculating on. I don't know what happens when they kick it down the line. I just know that they'd be going from basically the onus being on the owners to pay them regardless to the word they used was deferred, which I have to imagine means they get paid at some point.
Okay.
But basically, I'd imagine they could lump it into the negotiation that's going to be potentially some type of war between these two a year from now. But that's the only thing I can understand from the olive branch.
Right. So I couldn't understand why it was that magnanimous of a gesture, right, where it's like, yeah, you can just pay me a little bit later. And if the problem is, you know, cash flow, if the problem is earned money, you know, it's not as if you're going to make up that much more and you still owe the next set of payments later on. So I didn't quite understand why it was this huge magnanimous gesture. But I guess if it's deferred, it doesn't necessarily have to be deferred by a month or 2 months or 5 months or whatever. There can be a different timetable negotiated upon, I guess, at that point. So that makes sense.
Yeah, and it could be deferred, for all I know, for a long time until baseball's flourishing again. I mean, who knows? But yeah, you would basically not owe that money right away, which is the case now, which makes some sense that the owners would like that. There was another big story, though, in baseball in terms of money, which was that minor league players all around the sport are being released by teams and having their pay cut, you know, from $400 a month, which I'm not even sure how you live on that stipend, to be honest with you, down to no money in the case of the A's. They're not paying some of their minor leaguers. And the Nationals have lowered that number to $300. And these are owners and teams making this decision run by people who are billionaires several times over. So it's rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. I want to get into that with you. We can push it to next hour, though, because Kyle Glazer of Baseball America, who's been covering this story on a national level, will be with us at 11 o'clock in a half hour. Next, this weekend was the two-year anniversary of one of the great moments in D.C. sports history, and I want to talk with you about it right here on Grant and Danny.
1:59 to go. My goodness, Braden Holtby.
John Walton has heard here on 106.7 The Fan. 2 years ago, the anniversary celebrated over the weekend. The save by Braden Holtby. A save that will forever go down in immortality for the Capitals as maybe the moment when the Stanley Cup swung. They were down 1-0 in Vegas. They're playing in game two. As you just heard John Walton telling you, there were 2 minutes to go in the third period. They led 3-2. They had to escape with a split, and they did. After making that save, they finish off the game. It's a 1-1 series coming home. You accomplished your goal. They would go on to dominate games 3 and 4 at home, go back to Vegas, and win in game 5. So after that save right there, that moment, the Knights didn't win a game in that Stanley Cup series. And without that save, who knows how things would have gone. Danny, I remember everything about where I was and how that all went down. It's one of the coolest things I experienced live, even though I didn't have the best viewpoint of it up in the 400s. But that save 2 years ago, it's right up there with some of the great moments in this city's sports history.
Without a doubt. And it's impossible to explain this unless you were in that building, and you were. So Dar and I, because there wasn't enough seating in the press box for us, there was an overflow situation where they basically found a spot that's normally like a stage or a place where they, keep the chairs or something, and they kind of made these makeshift risers that were rickety as all hell, and we sort of wandered our way down there, and there was no food, and
Were you guys over upstairs by the drums that they were banging the whole time, like the really loud corner?
Yes, really close to all that live music stuff for their Showtime productions and everything else. So we were at the exact opposite end, okay, and kind of the middle deck. Whatever, seats are fine. I mean, who cares? Like, you're in the arena for a Stanley Cup final with the Capitals playing. I would stand in the rafters if I had to, right? So what's really hard to express is the following. I would say 85% of that stadium believes a goal has been scored. And the roar and eruption that flies in front of you, it's like dominoes falling rapidly from people from the side that are even with the goal line all the way back to our end. About 5% a little confused, 10% right behind the goal opposite us knew what had happened. They knew that the goal that wasn't a goal, that there was a save and everyone was skating around in disbelief that there isn't a goal, but they knew that there wasn't a goal. And so that initial rush of noise, Dar and I are both going, oh no, oh my God, they've tied it with this fluky bounce. What the hell is going to happen? The Caps aren't going to get a win here. They're going to get swept. What the hell is going to go on? This is awful. This is terrible. This sucks. The instantaneous roar and then subsequent confusion, silence, and you could basically hear 16,000 people going, what? Huh? As they skate to the faceoff dot to take that faceoff. It was one of the most unique, incredible sporting moments where the wave of euphoria for the fans followed by confusion and silence and grumbling right afterwards because of what Holtby had done. Remarkable moment. Remarkable.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my biggest memory, too, is how many people wrongfully celebrated as if they had just tied the game around me. I guess for me, the thing that's so amazing about that save, first of all, I do believe it's the best save Holtby's ever made. Now, there's a lot of luck in that save. There's some skill and athleticism for him to be able to contort his body and get over and throw the stick out and be able to have that stick stop Tuck's shot. But it was, I would say, probably more luck than skill in the sense that there's a lot of net, there's a little stick, and the puck hit that stick. Whereas he's probably made better skill saves in his career. But that save was the best save just from an optics standpoint of seeing how much net there is, how crazy he's flopping around like a fish trying to get over. And you got a couple of inches of stick there that the puck has to hit, and it happened. It's crazy. So imagine maybe the best moment of your career individually happening at the biggest time, at the grandest juncture. Those stars just don't align. Like, that save he made normally happens against the Devils in December. And we would talk about it, and we'd say, hey, did you see Holtby save last night? Or it might come up when we talk about great Holtby saves. But nobody really knows about it. This one is on murals. You know, this one is hanging on people's walls.
It's on t-shirts,
this one is a
man.
Tattoo that crazy Caps fans have. I mean, it is such a great moment in his career, and it happened on the largest stage in one of the biggest games he'll ever play in. And it's just so rare that guys get that experience. So I'm happy for him that it happened that way. But to the arena that night, so you remember I made the economically poor decision to go to both of those games as a fan. So we had the press credentials, as you said. I knew that the seating wasn't going to be particularly good, not in terms of view as much as just the fact that we may or may not have chairs, that we would be moving around during the game, that we might have to, you know, get up for different people, whatever. And I said, I don't want to do that. That's annoying. Plus, my wife decided she was coming out. We didn't have a kid yet. She was a big Caps fan. When's the next time they're going to be in the Stanley Cup? Oh, by the way, it's Vegas, which is kind of a fun city to be in if your team's winning championship series games. So she came out, and we bought tickets to both of those games. And I'll say really quickly, I mentioned this yesterday on the show, so I don't want to be too repetitive, but if you're ever considering with a DC sports team on the brink of something special, splashing financially, and you're able to pull it off, do it. As I told people during the World Series who said, I don't know if I should buy these tickets, they're too expensive. I have not for 1 second since we spent money on those Stanley Cup tickets thought about the money. And it wasn't like we had a lot of money at that time to spend. I mean, we spent $900 a ticket back-to-back games. Put them on a credit card. And I thought, this is probably a terrible idea. Like, we don't spend like this. We shouldn't do this. And I'm telling you, what is that, $3,600 for the four games plus whatever the prices are, and they gouge you for, you know, all the different fees and everything?
Mm-hmm.
For the two games, rather, for the four tickets. Like $3,600. I've never thought about it again. I've got so many stories. I've got so many great moments. We had so much fun. One was a win, one was a loss. But I've never thought about that money. I just have these memories of being at all the Stanley Cup games, except for game five when we stayed back for the watch party. But man, so we're sitting in the 400s. We're in our red cap sweaters. Everyone around us is in black and gold and Vegas gear. And when Tuck's free and they get that fortuitous bounce and he gets that shot off, I lose sight of the goal itself, the net on the ice, because everyone around me stands up and is screaming. And, Danny, there are seconds where people are hugging and high-fiving. They don't play the goal song or anything, but you're not listening for that because there's just a celebration. It's just this jubilous kind of euphoric moment in the arena. And it went on for, as you said, like a couple of seconds.
Yep.
Where people are hugging and engaging, and they've tied, and it's 3-3, and they might be 2-0 in the Stanley Cup if they can win this thing in overtime now. And it wasn't until there was kind of a collective, like, groan as people noticed that the game was still happening, that they weren't skating out to center, that they were just going to have a face-off near the net. And as they're sitting down, we find out, wait, there's not a goal? Because we can't see anything. Everyone's just standing mm-hmm. in front of us, and we're kind of consoling each other. And then we go, wait a second. We stand up and see that all the Caps players are kind of whacking at Holtz's pads and celebrating the save on the bench. And we go nuts. You know, they had been screaming in our faces for 15 seconds, or it felt like it was probably 3 or 4. Now we got to scream back like we're Michael Phelps' primal scream outside the pool. It was just such a great damn
moment. I'll never forget it, man.
Like the Kuzi goal, I know where I was, I know what I did. The Lars Eller goal, I know what I was, I know what I did. That one, because of the roller coaster, that's sports. I went from, this is my life, poor pitiful me, same old me, Caps are going to lose this game, 0-2, get swept. I mean, all of these emotions and this like, oh, I shouldn't have even paid for this ticket, why am I here, to he made the save, he made the save, oh my bleeping bleep, he made the save. And I was the happiest I'd ever been in the span of 5 seconds.
I wish I could quantify it for people. Because, again, I'm sure it looked amazing on television and you could sort of hear the din and the noise. But just fortuitously, having sat where we were, you could see the whole phenomenon develop. And as the play is ongoing, right, where Holtby kind of has like half comes out, half doesn't, and you see the puck bouncing that way across, and you could tell in his body language he's going, oh, crap, this is disastrous, right? This is the worst possible bounce in the history of humanity, and the Caps are going to be tied up despite missing a billion opportunities to step on the throat of this team. Oh, my God, what's happening? And Dar audibly next to me, I'll never forget it, goes, oh, my God. He goes, oh, my God. And I'm like, I'm too panicked to do anything about it, and it watches it happen in slow motion, and he's got 97% of the net to shoot at. 97% of the net to shoot at, and there's one level where the stick is off the ground and it's not too high, not very, you know, it's very low actually, and it's the one spot that the puck goes into, and we're just both so confused. We're both so bewildered for a full 5, 6, 7 seconds that seemed like an eternity, and watching the wave of joy and then slapped back with a wave of confusion and groaning and sadness was amazing. Amazing.
I've never thought about it this way, but Nash on Twitter says, I didn't realize this until Saturday, which is the anniversary. He said, but the Holtby save is my son's equivalent to the Diesel Super Bowl run for me. I got another guy here on Twitter that says something similar, Kevin. He says, the save, and he's got a picture, it looks like, in his home frame. He says, the save is up there with 70 Chip as the greatest championship moments in DC sports. And I got chills right now just saying that. But, yeah, I would agree with that. Again, I think there are people that would tell you they'll take Kuzi's goal as the moment of the run because it beat the Penguins and they were on to the next round. But that was the Stanley Cup. That was game two.
That's right.
They could have easily gone down 2-0, and there is no parade, and none of these conversations 2 years later are happening. Where were you? What do you remember? And would you take the save over the Eller GWG in game five? The Kuznetsov Bird-Selly to beat the Penguins. Where is it in your pantheon with that Riggins play? from the wonderful moments in D.C. sports lore. Your calls are available to be made now. Phones are open, 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. He's Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. You can call us at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. The Save, the two-year anniversary. We were both in the arena in Vegas for Game 2. Your memories and recollections of where you were and what you were doing, getting some great tweets at Grant NH Paulson and at Funny Danny about that. So I just during the break just threw together a list of some of the big moments. I put the Riggins Super Bowl run on there because, to me, that is the pre-2018 play in D.C. sports from a championship level, right? Now, that's the framed photo on your wall, in your man cave, in your basement, in your office, from this city's sports accomplishments. Others that might now be of that ilk, I would say if you go, let's go Nats first in terms of recency. In order, Danny, Juan Soto kind of fist pumping at second base after his wild card hit against the Brewers would be an image that would work on that wall. And when he comes through and they get through the wild card round when it looks like they were destined to lose that game, you could choose either of the Howie Kendrick home runs, the Dodgers division series. That was kind of like the koozie moment, maybe not to the same extent because the Caps had been at it a little bit longer trying to bump their head into the same wall, but that was around the Nats couldn't get through and an evil empire and the Dodgers in their league, and he hits the home run to do that. Kendrick against the Astros, obviously, in Game 7, hits the foul pole. As Max Scherzer said the first time that he actually thought the Nats were about to really win the World Series. And then from the Caps run, you would go with the Holtby save, the Kuznetsov GWG against Pittsburgh in overtime with the Bird, Selly, or Game 5 maybe, the clincher against Vegas, DSP falling as he scores the game-tying goal, Eller's game winner cleaning up the trash in the crease. Those are the moments. What am I missing?
I'd add in Daryl Grant's interception against Dallas in the NFC title game before the Super Bowl because it's a one-possession game. You know, Dallas has the football. Little, you know, pressure happens. Grant goes in, and it's the stadium has never been louder. There's never been more bedlam than that moment at RFK. That's the only one I would add just sort of off the top of my head within the last 50 years.
You're right, because my first thought was, well, that's not a Super Bowl play, but to your point, that's the run. It's the same as the Howie Kendrick against the Dodgers moment, the Soto against the Brewers, you know, the big Kuznetsov goal. Like, it's all part of a championship run for the Redskins.
It's Dallas NFC title game. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty major for Washingtonians to chronicle that one.
I can't even
sort of
imagine
the first highlight.
That, by the way.
Isn't
not
that crazy?
Only because neither team has been to an NFC championship game since 1916 at this point, but just knowing – even though the rivalry has been watered down and is dissipating some, and it will continue to because of player movement and free agency changing the NFL, but knowing how much this fan base hates the Cowboys now, and that is 25 years since those two teams were at each other's throats playing important football games or more, those clubs playing in an NFC championship game, because the closest thing I've ever had was the 2012 division title game. That, quote, Cowboys week, end quote. It was the Redskins and Dallas in week 17 at FedEx Field. The winner wins the East. The loser goes home and doesn't make the playoffs. That's the closest thing I've had. And that still to this moment, and it's not even close 8 years later, is the biggest Redskins game and the most fun environment and pregame atmosphere I've ever been a part of for the Redskins. That counts playoff games, by the way, including a week later at FedEx against the Packers. And that doesn't even compute. That's like the A-ball version of the major league level game right. That the Redskins and the Cowboys would be in the NFC Championship.
The significance lowered. Yeah, you're absolutely right. How about Riggins in that game, by the way? 36 carries, NFC title game, 140 yards, two touchdowns. His long carry in that game was 17 yards. Not a lot of explosions in that one. That was down your throat. 3.9 and a cloud of dust, basically, for the most part throughout there. That was physical football. Different era, man. Just different time.
Good old days. Let's go to Mindy and Ashburn on line one. Mindy, you're on Grant and Danny. We're looking back at Holtby's save 2 years after the fact.
Sure. Hey, Bob. How you guys doing?
Hey, Bob.
Hello, Robert.
Good. We were living in South Africa at the time, and I had my 14-year-old son, and I would get up, and the games would start at 2 a.m., and then by the time they finished, it was time to get up to start getting ready for school. So but when that save happened, the house was starting to kind of wake up at that time, but we were just, it was just crazy. We were so excited. It was awesome.
So you were in South Africa, and would you guys watch every game live in the middle of the night?
The playoffs we did, yeah. Yeah, the playoffs we did. We would get up for those. I called you guys a few times from there. I've always wondered if you guys still get downloads from there, because sometimes you would reference South Africa, and I always thought that was...
You remember that?
Coincidental, yeah.
And you're going, it's Mindy, it's me,
question.
It's me.
Yeah, appreciate the call.
I haven't
looked at where they're coming from, but yeah, we used to kill it in South Africa, Danny. Maybe Mindy was why.
We were huge in South Africa, and then there was like an Asian country, I believe, and then there was kind of like a Middle East country where we'd get the occasional sporadic download.
It's like someone lives there that listens to the show, you know?
That's right.
Basically how
one
it works.
Guy.
Yeah. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. So Kyle Glazer from Baseball America hit me up. He's unable to join us, so we'll have to get him on later in the week, which is not a problem. A really good guest and a guy that I've dealt with a lot on MLB Network Radio. But he's been covering the minor league pay part of this COVID-19 pandemic, which is it's painful, man. It's tough. And guys in the Nats organization found out that they're taking pay cuts if they're keeping their jobs. So next we'll get into that right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.